When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Here's some language from my classroom. Art can feel like it comes from a very personal and vulnerable place. So, in order to be in the cartoonist club or to be part of the tribe, we do not say things like that art sucks, because the way it's received or can be received is that you suck when you say that. It's a funny thing to make something that you want to share with the world and you want people to react to, and then you have to brace yourself for hostility, dislike, or indifference, negative reactions to the things you make. It hurts, right? So I try to generate an atmosphere in my classroom where, like, let's build each other up and not tear each other down. Because Lord knows the world is ready to do that anyway. So at least in this space, let's try to practice not doing that. Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, I got another thought, question, wondering at baronvonbear.com/AMA as in ask me anything. And someone asked, how do you deal with personal, non-constructive, negative feedback about your completed work? And then they even put in some notes. I have like a little follow-up box on that form to say, you know, what inspired you to ask this question. My cat is in the background knocking everything in the world off my desk. that's the noises you're hearing. And they said something about wondering if that may be even too personal a question. Well, you know, the whole thing is ask me anything. As I'm recording these, I'm sharing them on Patreon first before I decide whether or not I want to share them with the world. So, you know, as far as that goes, feel free to ask me whatever you're curious about. But I think that this is a worthy question, because I think it's something that we all creative types, well, just people, have to deal with. You're interacting with the world. Something my therapist said to me, and I think is true, something that I try to pretend is not true sometimes, is that we have zero chance of getting through this life without hurting somebody, right? We're going to bump into one another just by virtue of being alive. And I could go into a whole thing about thick skins and whatnot, but let's address this head on with the first big idea of how much it hurts when you get personal, non-constructive, negative feedback about your work. I have been harassed online in the past. I've had people who have sent me really angry messages and emails that were, there's no question that it was intended to hurt me. It was intended to make me feel bad about myself. I've also received feedback about my art from people within the industry who were operating from a position of some kind of power or influence, saying, you do that wrong. which is, it's just like, I'm so not aligned with that approach. It just feels so reductive to me to say something like that. My attitude is always, and this is just the way I'm wired, is like, my attitude is always like, well, what are you going for here? And if, not to be like the I Love Lucy joke where, like, if that's the hat you wanted, you picked a good one, you know, not to be that about it, but like, if I can understand what their approach and their perspective and what their goals were, well, then I can make a better assessment of whether or not their art was successful. And I can certainly say not for me about certain kinds of art, right? Without saying it is objectively bad, right? And depending on who you are and what you're, the way you're wired, that may or may not work for you. And we can agree to disagree on that. But I have received, yeah, some very unuseful personal assessments of my work. And the one that comes to mind that I got, and I think I mentioned this in a recent TPD, was this idea that my colors are too bright and there's too many of them. And this was particularly in response to Boulder and Fleet Mining for Trouble, which you can order on my website, jdrozd.com. You can read it online at boulderandfleet.com. And it sucked because I was really playing around with how color can be an expressive contributor to the storytelling. So I was really like using color a lot as a narrative tool, or I thought I was. And to have somebody that I trust and kind of looked up to and really respected say like, oh God, that's just too much. Just too much. Let's go through the feelings. Well, how do I deal with that? Well, first of all, it hurts. It feels like almost like, obviously like a personal attack. Well, I guess I'm too bright and colorful. I should tone myself down because people who know what the industry want are telling me that they don't want that. I have another sort of slice of my personality, though, that does feel very, like, I wouldn't say rebellious, but definitely subversive, who also wants to say, well, let's let the people decide, shall we? Why don't we put this in the world and see how people react to it? Well, and then sometimes you get that indifference where not a lot of people interact with it at all. And that hurts too. But that's not what the question was about. It was really about how do you deal with this non-constructive negative feedback. And yeah, it hurts because art comes from, for me, it comes from a very personal place. And for me also, I mean, just to like build context into my biography around this and to explain my worldview, my perspective on it, is that for me, like when I started out as a cartoonist, I don't think I would have said it this way back then, but in reflecting on my youth, I think comics and art making was how I searched for belonging. I remember having this image in my mind of the people who make these stories that mean so much to me and participate in this art form that fills me with so much life energy must be wonderful people. They can't be anything but wonderful people because look at what it is. Now, that's a naive perspective, but hey, I was 17. Come on. If a 17-year-old can't be naive, what can they be? But if you think about that, like entering that activity through this sort of earnest spirit of I'm going to find my people, and then to be told no, not you, right? We have all experienced this kind of rejection in one form or another, like when we were pursuing potential partners, or if we still are pursuing potential partners, and you'd have the whole, well, would you like to, and they say no. It hurts like that, doesn't it? It feels like the way I received it many times in my life is like, you don't deserve to be here. You don't belong here. Please go away. And that can almost feel like gaslighting in a way, especially when you've been doing this a little while and you practice this a little bit and you know that you've achieved something. At least you've done some skill acquisition and you feel like, no, I know this is not bad. It might even be good. I can say that when I look at this, the work looks pretty good to me. I feel satisfied with the results. Now, part of that could be, certainly, that you're not looking at it with the most objective eye because you were there the one making it and you have a picture in your head that you're trying to reach. And, you know, if you get close enough, sometimes you can say, that's pretty darn good. And we all, how do I know this? Because I can look at art that I did like 10 years ago and say, okay, I see what the kid was aiming for. It's not terrible, but, you know, he needed to work on this, and this, right? So sure, it could be partially a myopia. But when you feel like this is actually like, this is getting close to what I want it to be, and then have people say like, oh, that's awful, it can almost feel a little bit crazy making, can't it? It can feel a little bit like, well, I'm looking around going like, somebody must like this, right? I can't be the only person who likes this approach and this tone and this style and this, you know, this color palette. And when it's people that you respect saying that too, that has like almost a double sting to it. It's really demoralizing. Or has the potential to be really demoralizing, right? Now, I don't want to say that I have any answers on this regarding like how to manage those feelings. Those feelings are real and I have to process them. I have to sit with them. I try not to ruminate on them too much. I try to measure them against what I know to be true. And this gets back to that other part of my personality that is like just a tiny bit rebellious and says like, well, that's one person's opinion. Let me test this idea of with the world and see how they feel about it. Will somebody respond positively to this? Well, let's see. And I think there's like a little bit of that rebelliousness or that subversiveness like provides me with a kind of resiliency in that regard. But it doesn't take away the hurt. It still hurts. Because, yeah, you make things that you care about because you want people to like them. My goodness, my cat is just like absolutely intent on being part of this microcast. She's like dancing all around the room. She's clanging on her food bowl and she's clawing at the carpet. Baba Yaga, yes, you are now part of the microcast. I hope you are satisfied. So, yes, there's definitely a dynamic there in that you're making something that you want the world to interact with and, you know, for better or worse, Baba Yaga, please, for the love of Mike. This one's going to run long just because I have to keep stopping my cat from making a whole bunch of noise. Baba Yaga, please, I'm begging you, stop. So, but what, I mean, you know, what do you do with it? Well, I don't know. I mean, another thing I think about, like, just as like a broader human experience, I'm going to have to go in another room with this cat. I just feel like pain is not this, I hope this doesn't sound nihilistic or unintentionally metal, but pain is part of the deal. Like loving things means that like hurt comes into it as well. It's part of the experience of caring about something a lot. You know, I think that sometimes we get a little bit simplistic in our thinking around what happiness is. It's like, well, maybe we're not supposed to be pursuing happiness. Maybe we're supposed to be pursuing meaning, and that's a different thing. The act of making something comes with pain in that you are making sacrifices to do it. You are saying no to other things to say yes to this. So that's a cost. And putting it into the world means that you're going to have to experience the cost of some people saying yes, some people saying no to that thing. So again, I don't want to brush the question off in that way and say like, well, that's the deal. You know, can't fight City Hall, don't even try. I would never say that to anybody. I think it's worth acknowledging that the pain of rejection is part of the experience of making something that matters to you. If it doesn't hurt to be rejected about it, then it doesn't really mean that much to you, does it? I mean, that's literally one of the reasons I'm doing these personal microcasts, is to like put a little bit more on the line around this project, Baron von Baer, because I care about it so much. So I'm willing to step out and potentially look pretty foolish. Like one of the fears I have is that people are going to say, oh, geez, Jersey, you really should have thought harder before you shared those thoughts on that thing, because those were really half-baked thoughts. Or your opinions on this are blinded by your perspective in XYZ ways, right? Here's what you're not seeing. And that also feels kind of, I don't want to say hurtful, but I'm really afraid of being wrong. I think I talked about that in the last microcast. I'm really afraid of being wrong. So I don't know. I feel like it's all dangerous. And going back to when I was being harassed, like I had some people like really giving me a hard time online, you know, as much as it hurt and as much as it called up a lot of internal self-doubt of like, oh my gosh, what if I am an obnoxious narcissist in talking about comics like this the way I talk about it? You know, you just take, I took a few steps back and said like, well, whether I am or not is another question, but what was the intent of this message that I got, right? This is a person who was definitely trying to harm me. Do I agree with that approach? No. I think that is a foolish and useless way to engage with fellow human beings. I don't have to carry this. They're trying to put a little piece of pain in my pocket, and I don't need to carry that. Now, I still carried some of it because, like I said, it drummed up my own personal self-doubt. But you know, I can create a little perspective around it by saying like, well, what was the intent here? Another example I think of, and this was like actually constructive feedback, was when I first met Dan Mishkin, who I worked on, you know, the Warren Commission report with, co-founded Kids Read Comics and later on A2CAF with. One of my personal heroes as a young person, and now I'm grateful to say my friend. When I first met him, I gave him my work and I was really like charged. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm meeting him. And he's like one of the reasons I'm making comics. And I really want him to come back with these books that I gave him and say, these were incredible. Why wouldn't I want that? And he came back and he's like, they're pretty good. Here's some things you're doing weird with your sound design though. And that was like the birth of me becoming really obsessed with sound design, because it was so emotionally fraught for me to hear this person say, here's all the things you're doing incorrectly with your sound design. And he was right. And I was like, oh my gosh, I blew it. You know, I didn't blow it. He was trying to help me. He was being helpful. But then I have one more story about this kind of negative and non-helpful feedback and how it can lead us astray. It led me astray. Actually, I got a couple stories. One, when I was shopping Baron Von Behr around different publishers, I got a lot of really positive feedback from a bunch of different editors. We love this. This is really charming. Oh my gosh, this would be wonderful. I can't sell this. The market's not ready for this. And more than a few editors said, could you give me the same thing, but with human kids in middle school? More than a handful of editors said this to me. And I remember with each little piece of feedback, I felt a little twinge of pain in that, but that's not what I'm doing. I'm not trying to tell a story where the kid literally sees their own reflection in the book. I'm trying to write characters that a variety of people can invest themselves in. And I'm purposefully trying to be vague about this through animal fiction to make the messaging less didactic and more of an entertainment that has didactic material encoded in it, right? What I was hearing, what I received, I'm not saying this is what they said, but this is what I received, is that like, we want you to make something that is more directly didactic. And I said, oh, I guess if that's what they want. And I sat down and I started drawing this drawing. And I mean, I'll dig it up and I'll link it in the post about this, where I tried to take the same visual approach that I landed on for Baron Von Behr, sort of the same visual language, but I was drawing kids. I'm gonna draw a bunch of kids with flashlights hunting ghosts or whatever, just to start exploring this idea. What would I do with middle school kids in a spooky story? And this is the kind of person you marry, is that my wife came into the room, Anne came into the room, saw me doing that, and she was like, what are you doing? No, no. She's like, that's not what's in your heart. Don't do that. If nobody even wants it, don't do what's not in your heart in order to try to reach what they think they want. And she was right. She was absolutely right. I shelved it, put it aside. It's a good drawing, but it's not what I really wanted to do. But here's the second story of how these negative stories can infiltrate us. When I did the Baron Von Behr pitch, I purposefully made the sample art look a certain way for certain editors that I had in mind. And one of the things I did is I dialed the color back. I purposefully muted the colors in the sample pages because of the feedback I got that your colors are too bright and you use too many. It's like, okay, well, I'll make it a little bit muted. And also, I used a font that I really don't like, but it was one that I noticed that a lot of graphic novel publishers for young people were using, which is has an uppercase and a lowercase. I have some strong feelings on this that I don't feel like going into. I prefer all uppercase font. It's not a hill I want to die on, but my thinking was, here was my thinking at the time. It's like, I'm going to dial the colors back and use this upper and lowercase font in the sample pages. Once it's sold, once a publisher sends me a contract and I sign it, I say, okay, now let's talk about the art. I'm going to want to use this font instead. And I'm going to start turning in pages with brighter colors. And we can have that battle now because the contract is signed. So I was purposely designing the pitch to like sort of bypass some of the negative feedback that I'd received in the past. And it still didn't get sold. And here's the funny thing, is when I finally did find a publisher who was interested. One of the first things they said was, do you think you could brighten the colors a little bit? And I was like, that's who I'm signing with. If I just trusted myself a little bit more, the right people inevitably will find it. Now, that sounds a little bit like fairy tale thinking and Pollyanna-ish, perhaps. But I can't help but think it's a little funny that something that I changed in the work to try to hopefully make it more quote-unquote marketable was the one of the only critiques a potential publisher had about the work. That's pretty funny to me. So, I don't want to fall down on a bunch of bromides around this and say, just believe in yourself, have faith in the work. Because, I mean, there's like a level of personal honesty that needs to be arrived at too, I think. And I'm still working on that myself. But, and it doesn't take anything away from the pain that I felt when I was shopping Bear and Bombera around. When I was pitching it to publishers and getting all this feedback, like I said, I wound up doing this drawing of these kids, these middle school kids with flashlights, thinking like, well, I guess if I want to exist as a cartoonist in this world, I just have to do this. And I'm sure I can find something that I will find, I'll find a story that's rewarding to me in that genre, right? But what was that? That was me saying, well, okay, I guess if that's your critique of me, is that like animal characters are out and this is in, and the thing that I love and I feel I get the most life energy out of and that I've been kicking around for literally 2 decades, sketching Baron von Baron my sketchbooks, that's no good, then I guess I'll just put it away and I won't make it after all. I mean, that's where I was. I literally was there. I had received enough no's that I was like, well, I guess this isn't for the world. And I'll put it in a drawer and I'll figure something else out. So that stuff can really affect you. And it's not an easy thing to stand your full height when you're getting that kind of feedback. But I guess that's one of the things that makes this endeavor meaningful, at least for me, is that repeated challenge to stand my full height, and I don't always do it. And that's why I'm doing these microcasts, is to try to practice that a little bit more. So thank you for that thought, question, and wondering. This was, I think, it was worth chewing on for me. I got something out of it. I hope you did too. If you got something out of this, you might like my book, BaronVonBear.com. Baron von Baer and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue is the name of the book. Please go to that website. Take one of the many action items there. And help me make this thing a successful endeavor so I can continue to make more work that feels honest and authentic to me instead of internalizing a bunch of negative feedback and trying to chase after trends that other people perceive are there. Okay, I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
Well, Orko, Jeremy sure changed his ways.
Yeah, he was acting pretty rotten for a while. I think all he really wanted was for people to notice him. But what good does it do to be noticed if people don't like what they see?
That's right. The best way to get attention is not to look for it. By being polite and helpful, people will not only notice you, they'll like you too.
I'm going to do something helpful right now.
What's that?
I'm going to say goodbye!